Are you really relatively? Is it really football? Oh, the call and response never works.
Is it wicked?
Hello and welcome back to Relatively Football. Sometimes calling, sometimes responding. It's a little kind of midweek episode in a truncated Champions League update. Going to have some fun, talk you through a few results, chat about what we're up to. You know, chat about the family and look forward to another massive weekend. Flo, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm feeling great about the long weekend, which I'm sure all of our listeners are in the UK.
Happy Passover. Happy Holly.
In the US, do you get a bank holiday, though? I actually don't know.
No, they're not really into it.
Okay, so...
secret's out. The United States doesn't like holidays.
Sucks to be you, but shout out UK listeners for the long weekend. Probably one of the juiciest bank holiday collections of the year, actually, getting the Friday and Monday off, which is pretty tasty. I will sort of be working on the Monday, but tomorrow is officially a proper day off.
Well, we'll leave the rest of that chat for the Relatively Bank Holidays podcast. Before we do get to the football, I am Theo Lloyd-Hughes. I'm here with my sister Flo. Throw that in there. And Flo, before we get to the football, you've been hanging out with Mum.
Yeah, it was a relatively feast today.
Jealous. Wish I was
listeners in the UK will know, obviously, that from Monday we can have people in our gardens, which is a bit of a laugh. We had some really good weather.
Why not jump it ahead a few days and cheat the system?
No, from the Monday this week. Gone. Don't worry. I'm not a rule breaker. I mean, this weather at the start of the week as well was glorious, and like people in parks was amazing. And then last couple of days, kind of fallen down a little bit. It's scheduled to snow next week, so let's go, baby. That's a laugh. But yeah, so I did see her today, and we had some hot crisp buns and some Percy pigs, and set the world to rights.
How is Mum? I need to reply to her text. She's been texting me a lot recently. I've been quite bad.
We also went to the great DIY shop on Blackstock Road and bought about 8 of the same thing. She wasn't sure which one she actually wanted, and they were all $1.99. So I was like, let's just get all of them. And we did. So yeah, that was fun.
You really are becoming your mother's daughter.
I do love DIY shops.
Buying faff at the DIY shop.
Honestly, the DIY shops on Blackstock Road, if anyone wants, you like, there's this shop that you can get everything you ever wanted, and it's all like $1.99, and just such good stuff. So anyone wants any tips, hit me up. Relatively DIY podcast coming soon.
Well, look, on the subject of everything you could ever want, there was some Champions League football this week.
That was a good segue.
Three massive matches and one French feast postponed by the Panini pandemic COVID. Disonk nerf. That might not be right.
I think it is.
Anyway, so yes, Flo, we had some massive games yesterday. Always that kind of 7 a.m. kickoff catches me off guard. But you know what? I had my alarm set. I was up. I was ready. I was in Budapest in spirit. Wolfsburg 0, Chelsea 3. Chelsea are through to the semifinals. What a performance. Massive one, that one. I'll go through the rest of the results and then we'll unpick them. Man City 2, Barcelona 1 in the second kickoff on Wednesday. And then just finished today, we had Rosengard 0, Bayern Munich 1. Schüller getting the only goal of that game. Bayern Munich going through 4-0 on aggregate. Very easy win for them. And then, like I said, Paris Saint-Germain and Lyon continues to be postponed because of COVID-19. Flo, where do you want to start with these brilliant set of games?
Should we start Chelsea chronologically?
And yeah, let's
probably
go chronologically.
I guess the best game. The best game, yeah, I would say the best game. What a win. I mean, after the first leg and Wolfsburg's performance in that, which their manager said, I think Adam Summerton mentioned this on the comms yesterday, he said that was their best performance of the season, the first leg for Wolfsburg. The amount of chances they had, getting that away goal, how unlucky they were. I think a lot of people thought Wolfsburg had a very good chance of going through, and their history against Chelsea. And Chelsea just completely kind of annihilated any threat that Wolfsburg could bring to them and just controlled the game from the first minute, and it was just a complete performance.
Well, I just want to bump in there, because I agree with you apart from the way you said first minute. I actually thought Wolfsburg started all right in this game. And once again, you saw the directness of Wolfsburg catch Chelsea off guard.
I have a confession to make.
Oh God, here we go.
In classic Flo style, I had a very annoying Zoom call that put me in a really bad mood. So I decided to go for a run and I missed the first half an hour of the game. So... Right.
So I think you're right from about the 20th minute.
So
Wolfsburg once again came out of the traps really, really, really well. And they dropped Lena Oberdorf in the midfield, went for more of a 4-4-2. And I think it worked really well, you know, trying to skip out the midfield and putting a lot of pressure on Chelsea. Sent a lot of traffic down that right-hand side where they, you know, the manager obviously was going to either target Jess Carter or Hannah Blundell. Ended up being Jess Carter, who was filling in at right-back for Mjelde / Neve Charles. And you felt like the game was set up for Wolfsburg to have a go, try and, you know, see if Chelsea could bend and break at right back, take a lot of shots and do it quick. And then there was a glimpse, I think Wolfsburg had a corner about 10 minutes in, and Sam Kerr nearly sets up Fran Kirby with a beautiful through ball counter-attack. And, you know, within 10 seconds, it goes from Wolfsburg's corner to Chelsea having a really good chance. And that was the sign that Chelsea were going to counter-attack and press and do so much with so little. And yeah, like I said, after the first 15, 20 minutes, Chelsea completely took over. And I'm going to throw the mic back to you to go back into what was so good about Chelsea. But I do want to give Wolfsburg a little bit of credit for, you know, trying to play more strikers. I really like their right back. I'm going to totally mispronounce her name, but Rauch was really, really good. Rolfo as well on that left-hand side. They were really trying to get a more direct play from Wolfsburg. Flo.
Yes, so obviously you were on the first half analysis because I was absent. But yeah, I think I stayed on after the full-time whistle, like watching all the kind of analysis before then the Man City game kicked off. And they had Karen Carney and Rachel Brown-Frinnis on for the punditry, which I thought was a really good combination. And they had a really good look at what Emma Hayes had set up her team to do so well. And where I think we talked about both English teams in the first legs last week, really lacking that stability in midfield. Chelsea had that in buckets and then kind of overloaded that as well with the addition of G in the second half when Wolfsburg were just chasing the game so much, and then Fran Kirby gets that third goal. I think Emma Hayes really learnt from that first leg, which I think shows just how good a coach she is. I said on Twitter how fantastic I thought Jess Carter was. I think she was exceptional, just almost coming out from the cold like that. Like, I know Craig was talking about the experience she had at a young age playing Champions League, and that's so important. And to have not played that much football in the last couple of years, bar a few cup games and occasional sub appearances, I just think, wow, to come out like that just shows how talented she is. And I hope it's like something that's going to now kickstart her career at Chelsea, and perhaps she might be the stand-in now for Mjelde for the rest of the season. I know, obviously, Neve Charles has had a fantastic season, so I know Emma Hayes might want to bring her straight back in for the next leg, and she'll likely start in WSL. But it's a bit of a selection headache now, given how good Jess Carter was.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to Chelsea's and Hayes' selection, I think, you know, you saw in the first leg, she went for the loopholes, Ingle, G, trio. It didn't necessarily work. She brings on Aaron Cuthbert late on in that first leg. And Cuthbert
was fantastic on yesterday.
Exactly. And so then yesterday she starts Cuthbert kind of in the 4-4-2, 4-3-3, and she becomes that perfect first line of defence. So happy to mix it. So happy to try and put in an early challenge, track back, do the things that maybe G wouldn't do. But then she brings on G when there's more space and the game's opened up, and you see G be able to pick the perfect pass and set up for Kirby's third goal, or Chelsea's third goal. So you saw Emma Hayes just get every little selection spot on.
Yeah, and I think I'm sure most of our listeners have probably seen that video that was kind of went a little bit viral yesterday of Hayes' kind of coaching instructions, which I think is such a good video, because if you go and watch a lot of WSL games this season, because of the situation with no fans, you do get to hear a lot of the coaches, and I think it's great because you get to see what they're doing. And I think seeing that and seeing the players' movement really showcases how Emma Hayes had set up the team to really minimise any space that Wolfsburg had to work with. And you could tell by the end of the game how absolutely shattered they were all were from pressing so hard to really, really shrink Wolfsburg down and make sure that when they had the ball, there was nowhere to really play. And therefore, Chelsea would turn it over pretty quickly and be quite effective with the possession they had. And I thought Chelsea was so organised at the back as well. And Christian Berger, who's been so good this season, kind of led from that. Magdalena Eriksson, as usual, is, you know, central to that as well. So just really across the pitch, really, it was kind of perfection. And I also thought with the Sam Kerr penalty, which I didn't watch live, but Jesse told me about pretty as soon as I got back from my run. And I had a look at that. And I think that also just showcases the luck, the dust of luck that Chelsea have at the moment, which luck is not the reason they're doing so well, no, but it definitely plays a part in this season. And I think we've seen throughout the Champions League and, you know, in the WSL as well, in some decisions, that there is something in the air with Chelsea this season that is the sort of thing that you also need if you're going to go on a journey and win every single trophy. You also need luck to be on your side, especially in women's football when the quality of the officiating maybe isn't as good as what we would see in the men's game. You need a bit of luck to go your way. And I think there was a bit of luck on the pitch yesterday and in that first leg as well, and Wolfsburg hit the post, what, three times?
Yeah, I mean, Pajor, the striker for Wolfsburg, the one time she got in behind Eriksson, couldn't get on the end of a ball from Blomqvist. And I do think that was probably 15 minutes in. I kept thinking, oh, if Pajor finishes that and gets that 1-0 lead.
Yeah, totally changes everything.
That could have really changed the game. And you, like you said, Eriksson was pretty much flawless, maybe apart from that one chance early on. Just kind of on that note of luck, though, you know, this has been a Champions League, which is almost going to be defined by penalties, poor refereeing. You know, there seems like there's a penalty or a penalty miss in every game. Of all the ones, I actually thought the Sam Kerr one, winning that penalty, which Harder very, very brightly stuck away, I really thought was the, you know, not too bad. There's contact.
I mean, yeah. I think in the grand scheme of crap penalties this season, it could have been a lot worse. But I just think it shows that decisions are going their way when, maybe they're not going the way for other teams. I think you need that.
Yeah, let's use that moment to switch over to Man City 2, Barcelona 1. A 4-2 win for Barcelona across the two legs on aggregate. That, I thought, had a penalty shout, which obviously doesn't really end up affecting the overall, you know, the whole leg 2-2 win doesn't really affect too much. It gives Manchester City a win in the history books. But I do think Ellen White bought that penalty, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And she's done that in the past, especially for England as well. I think Barcelona, like, if they hadn't have scored their goal, they should have had a penalty when Alex Greenwood basically did
Absolutely.
A WWE move. That was insane. That was really
Which,
sort of like,
you know, going back to the Man U Man City game where, you know, Casey Stoney was berating the refs and maybe even, you know, trying to ask people to protect Lauren James and, you know, Beth Mead was sent off. It reminded me of that. The ref just
the
didn't
Arsenal
really
game.
Sorry, excuse me. Yeah, the Arsenal game, Manchester United v Arsenal a few weeks ago. Like, it reminded me of that, where, like, you just don't know what the ref is going to call. And so when there's, you know, slide challenges, wrestling moves not being picked up, and then Ellen White goes down in the box and it's a penalty, you're just kind of like, you don't really know where you stand.
I think Ellen White is quite good at that sort of Harry Kane dark artsness, which I think is part of the best strikers.
There's
in
a
the
tiny
game.
Touch on
a
her
good,
shoulder.
Good at doing that.
But there's no clip of the feet. There's no obstruction. There is the Barcelona defender puts a tiny hand on her shoulder and that's it. You know, it's not for me.
But there were also a lot of chances.
Exactly.
That
I was going to say, we're doing
City,
Barcelona disservice.
Well, okay. So
you were going to say City.
No. So Barcelona were exceptional again.
I was going to say that.
On Wednesday. They are
Oshuala
so...
Gets,
they, you know, but they are so... Yes, they score a shitload of goals. But they are so organized defensively, so organized, and I think that is why they're such a tough team to break down. And I think they showed that again, because City from the off, and they had to do this obviously, were just constant. It was just an onslaught of attacks, onslaught, you know, straight to the box, try and put a ball in, try and go direct, try and have a shot, obviously because they need to score early. And Barcelona never looked that rattled, really, by any of it, especially considering the circumstances. And then City get that first half goal, which was crucial to give them any hope in hell of doing it. And then I think Barca bounced back pretty well from that. They didn't let it phase them. They just kind of were like, you know, in the way that they played, they didn't panic. They were so calm across the two fixtures. Well, we know that they're deadly at scoring goals, but I think what was so impressive was how organised and compact they were. And even though they were letting City have a lot of the ball, they actually, you know, there were some dangerous opportunities, but I never felt like, oh my God, you know, like Barca were defending for their lives, you know?
Well, and I think it takes an immense player in Oshuala to have the confidence to know you're going to get another chance. You're going to get another chance because Barcelona were creating so many chances and coming so close. The one where Schwala shoots, Bronze clears it. Well, actually, Roebuck makes a save. Bronze clears it off the line and then it nearly goes in as an own goal off Abidal Camper. I mean, I've never seen... It's been, you know, so many chances like that. You always see them go in. And City were really riding their luck in this game.
I thought, though, my vision for this, as we know, it was going to be so much about Bronze and her role. And I think she did that yesterday. And that's why I was so disappointed for City, because I was like, you know, they gave... At the end of the day, they're not as good as Barcelona. And
Absolutely.
They gave every single inch on Wednesday. And that's, you know, to put it in a cliche, cringe way, like Gareth Taylor and his players can be super proud because... Yeah, the first game was a little bit chaotic at times from City. I think they were very naive and Gareth Taylor was very naive in that first game on the way they went into that and the way they set up for that. But yesterday, they honestly gave everything. And at the end of the day, they're not as good as Barcelona. And Barcelona are having a very good season and they look even better than when they did. And they got to the Champions League final last time and got absolutely crucified by Lyon. So I think it's completely, you know, they should be proud of that performance yesterday. And I think Bronze, you know, she was unreal. And they obviously missed Lauren Hemp as well. That was always going to be a challenge, not having Lauren Hemp in the side.
Yeah, I thought Bronze was much better yesterday. I thought Esme Morgan was actually really, really better yesterday, especially.
Yeah,
she had
a bad first leg, didn't she? So.
She was taken off at half time in the first leg and was definitely a weak link.
Ellen White was really good, and I think City. Jesse and I were talking about the fact that we think City looked a lot poorer as soon as White came off as well, because she's such a threat for them. She, you know, she's such a good finisher that I think that did kind of. They lost that edge when she did come off. But, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, Barcelona are better.
Yeah, well, I also think, actually, just going back to Ellen White, like, I do think she struggled to find the right running lane yesterday. I think there were a couple of times where Chloe Kelly was able to do that Chloe Kelly thing where she pulls it on one foot, goes out wide, and then sends in that, like...
Well, and White was just a bit late to the ball.
Yeah, or wasn't reading the run, or, you know, maybe you've got to give Mappy Leone some credit for boxing out White. But I kind of felt like Kelly actually had a better game than she did in the first leg, had decent service, and it wasn't being capitalised on. And kind of, if you zoom out of this game, you know, Man City, the only two goals they could score against Barcelona across 180 minutes was a Sam Mewis corner... where Sam Mewis can, you know, out-jump anyone and knock it down, which Janine Becky finishes off a deflection, and then a penalty that Ellen White buys off the referee. So I would say that, you know, especially in the first leg, City were completely boxed out in against Barcelona. And then in the second leg, Kelly had a couple of glimpses, but you never really saw the Barcelona defence stretch, like you said. And I think that comes from, like an immense amount of organisation. And I think this Barcelona team just seems so well balanced and so confident that they're going to get more chances, that they're going to take care of business, that they're going to stay in their shape, that even a team like City, who we've come to expect to have this kind of maximum quality, just felt like a league below this Barcelona team.
Yeah, and I think, I know Craig's been having this conversation on Twitter, just I think it's a bit of a reality check to people who were saying that the WSL is the best league in the world and, you know, it's total domination from now, because actually, even though the landscape of European women's football is changing, there are still much better teams out there and very competitive leagues out there. And I think it's great. I think that they're all battling together, because we don't just want to see one division and one country just become really good at everything, because it's already kind of boring with Lyon and the US just winning everything. So it's nice to have, you know, watch two really good games of football.
Well, maybe a reality check to Gareth Taylor, who's a new manager, who's got a big job, and we're yet to maybe see the best of him against some of the best tactical minds. You know, Emma Hayes schooled him at Kingsmeadow in that 3-1 win. And this is, you know, the other kind of top level that he's been managing against. And City didn't look great in either of these legs tactically, maybe better in the second leg. But I think you're going to see that is a learning curve for Gareth Taylor, who's a manager we're yet to really see kind of get going in these higher stakes games. You know, he's obviously done really, really well in the league and won last year's FA Cup. But, you know, we're still... Gareth Taylor is, you know, it's going to take a second there. So I think that was one of my takeaways, is sort of like, when will we start to learn what kind of manager Gareth Taylor is? Because right now he's had the best squad you can imaginable given to him, and he's done well, and he deserves credit for that. But how do you see him adjust in these bigger stake games? Moving on to the final game of the midweek, Rosengard 0 at home to Bayern Munich 1. Bayern Munich cruising through 4-0 on aggregate. Lovely goal by Leah Schuler, the kind of bombastic headed effort passer, Steph Lab, the Canada goalie, in goal for Rosengard. Really, really fun goal to watch. Flo, this was I don't know if you caught this one. I caught this one on a ropey stream. Shout
in
out
a classic, in a classic me, I watched the second half. Nice. I don't know why I'm just as obsessed with the second halves. You know, the main action half. Yeah, I watched it on the FC Bayern YouTube page. Great coverage.
Oh, nice.
Really good quality as well. So
yeah, I had really good quality. I had no comms. I was on the W United stream. If anyone's ever in America, check out their platform. It's really weird. It feels a bit dark internet, but it really works. So no complaints.
Is it legit or what?
I think it is, but it feels not legit. Like whoever's doing their like design UX design, it makes you feel like you're in
it's
a weird
budget.
Place. Anyway, this reminded me of the first leg a little bit in that like, Rosengard look quite good on the ball, but Bayern Munich are a really great rope-a-dope sort of side. And they know, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week, me saying like they're kind of holding back so that other teams don't have a good scouting report on them. I really feel like they just declared at 1-0, 4-0 up on aggregate. And you really feel like we haven't seen the best of Bayern Munich, but not because I think they're underperforming, because I honestly think they're just conserving energy. And they look like a really good counter-attacking side that I'll be interested to see them further on in this competition against teams that want to have more of the ball, that want to kind of post up and pin them back and then see how they break. I think players like Bernstein and Schuler can do so much in such small spaces and kind of just have this great burst and attention to detail and anticipation of the ball that I think gives me really hope in seeing them maybe cause an upset. Because I kind of feel like they're maybe the closest thing we have to a dark horse at this point. You know, people obviously rate Chelsea, Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain and Lyon have been there, done that. So it really feels like Bayern Munich are probably the outsider's pick at the moment. And I just have a good feeling about them.
Mainly Leupold's revenge game?
Oh, there it is. Love that shout out. Yeah, and she's
I'm intrigued
my
to see
Chelsea
as well
player.
What happens with the location of this, because I think Germany are in another national lockdown. Obviously, UK coming out of one. Don't know what they're going to do about where this tie is going to be played. I really, really want to see the Chelsea home tie at King's Meadow, just kind of selfishly in case I can get to cover it. Or just because I think it does make a massive difference if you're going to have away goals and that rule in. I think it's important that you then have some kind of legitimacy to the location. But I do understand in a pandemic, you know, it can't always be that way. But yeah, I'd love to see it at a good time as well, not in a random time of day, because they've got to put it at a random time of day because the clubs have got to travel there. So I just love it if it can be under the lights, at King's Meadow in Munich, and yeah, great times.
I love it. So yeah, just to wrap up there, listener, it'll be either Paris Saint-Germain or Lyon against Barcelona in the semi-final.
I think is it the 16th of April, that
24th they have it scheduled right
I
now.
Mean the Lyon PSG game.
Oh, excuse me, 18th of April.
Sorry, 18th of April, okay.
Yeah, due to the COVID-19 postponement, PSG and Lyon are due to play on the 18th of April, with the semi-finals scheduled for the 24th of April. And
which
yes.
Also means that the City-Chelsea game, which is scheduled for the 24th of April, will be moving to likely midweek, which is a bit disappointing for all of us because I just think it gets fewer eyes on it when it's midweek. I think, you know, having it on a weekend would be great for the WSL and kind of building that tension and that atmosphere. And I actually think it'd be better to have the Champions League on a weekday, but... Or maybe it's, you know,
traditionalist.
That's just me. Yeah.
Flo, let's wrap up some any other business. What have you had on your mind in the world of women's football this week?
So the big news outside the Champions League was the announcement on Wednesday, which I think took some people by surprise because there'd been sort of rumours in the air, but nothing official. And the news that Joe Montemurro will be leaving Arsenal at the end of the season pretty much looks like to return to his family. He had been flying to and from Australia last season, especially for family reasons. So obviously very far away. And he's been here for a while now and completely understand that decision. And when Arsenal were in that sticky patch, there were conversations about whether Joe Montemurro is the right man for the job. But it's just kind of still shocking to kind of see it in the flesh of him leaving. And I just think it was really nice to see so many people speaking so highly of him because I think he is a great manager and a great guy. And he always has been really nice to media and really open. And he's just such a kind of a footballer brain, such a good coach, really, I think, buys into kind of the Arsenal philosophy across the whole club and has got Arsenal playing in such a, what's the word I'm looking for? Such a, not silky.
Clean, vivacious.
But yeah, just such
slick.
A kind of, yeah, such a slick and
purist
and silky way that is like the Arsenal that we know. And I think he sewed that into the fabric of the football club, and it's going to be really difficult for anyone to fill his shoes. And he had to, you know, fill some pretty big shoes when he came in. And I think he did a big job at a time when other clubs were investing more than Arsenal were, other clubs were winning more than Arsenal were. And he had to still make them a force, help them win a league title the first time in a while and create a really good brand of football. And they're just so good to watch. I mean, think of the quality of the goals that we've seen during his tenure there are just kind of ridiculous, team goals especially. So yeah, we'll miss you.
Flo, well, actually, all Arsenal fans out there, Flo's not an Arsenal fan, just to clear that up. Please get in touch. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Montemurro leaving. If you have any fun anecdotes, if you've got any opinions about his style of managing, what he's meant to the club, or if you have any funny stories, please, get in contact with us on Twitter or Instagram or relativelyfootball@gmail.com. But Flo, I was just going to say, kind of before we move on, what do you think? Do you think things got stale under Montemurro? Do you think that's harsh of me to say that? Do you think this is just a natural managerial timeline thing? Do you think it's more personal than that? Or what? Why
you
would
know
you
what?
Say
I
why right now?
I think it's a bit of everything. I think I would say probably the biggest thing it seems is personal. But I think there's also an element of it which is, I think there was a bit of frustration on both sides. Seeing his rivals start to do so well, his job getting tougher. There'd been internal reviews about the number of injuries and the number of and the training practices and questions about the training and the coaching that was going on and reviews of that. And I think that put a lot of pressure on him as well. And across this season, I think, you know, he has been very self-reflective in his post-match interviews a lot of the time about his role and how he can get Arsenal winning again. And I think the harsh reality is just that City and Chelsea are better than them now, and there's not much they can do about it. I think that defeat to United was maybe the sort of wake-up call, if you like, because Arsenal had always maybe sort of guaranteed themselves in this era as like the third best team since their last league title win anyway, as Chelsea have really kind of pushed on. So I think it's a little bit of everything, but the personal thing probably being the biggest factor, and wanting to go home and take a bit of time off, and yeah, it'll just be really interesting to see what happens.
Moving on to other news, the FA Cup is back this weekend. Grassroots, non-elite, to use a word I'm not super fond of, but non-elite football is back. There's lots of fun games out there. Go check out your local area or your local teams. I do know for everyone around the world that Watford are streaming their game against MK Dons in the second round of the FA Cup live on YouTube. So go to the Watford FC YouTube account if you fancy popping in on some women's national league football in the UK. There's obviously a full smorgasbord of WSL and WSL Championship games this weekend, including Leicester City versus London City Lionesses is going to be on an FA player. So go check out your Atta Footballs, your NBCs, Optus Sport, and all that kind of thing to go watch some football. Flo, last bit of news I wanted to get to before we get out of here is, have you been following... Oh, no, you got a question for me.
No, I just want to make a point on the return of the FA Cup. I just think it's a really bad idea, the way that they're doing it, because you've got players coming back having not trained at all for like 4 months, expected to play like full games against each other and then full games against much stronger opposition. And we've heard a lot about, you know, there's been lots of stories about the lack of access to rehab and surgeries and injury treatment and all those kind of things that are required when someone gets injured.
Rene Hector in particular, who does play for Watford.
Yeah, exactly, being a prime example, and countless others. And I am very concerned about the fact that teams are going straight back into play, and putting themselves, being put in quite dangerous, potentially dangerous situations. And if these players get injured, they're not going to have access to private surgery, or they're unlikely to have access to private surgery. They're not going to have access to great physios. They're not going to have access to top sports scientists and, you know, people to help their recovery like semi-professional and professional teams are. And I think it's a really risky decision from the FA to do this. And I think that, you know, this could end up really badly, and it's only also going to get worse as the Championship and WSL sides come into it, and these, you know, almost amateur teams are going to be expected to keep up with them. I just think it could go horribly wrong, and I just hope it doesn't, but I just think it's pretty risky. And also, you know, these, and I saw this point made by a player, I can't remember who they played for, but like, you know, she was making the point that they are there to make up the numbers, because in reality, these teams are not going to progress. So they're purely here to make up the numbers, to ensure the legitimacy of the competition this season, but to make sure that when a WSL team wins it, you know, it made sense. And I just think that just feels like they're being used. And I think it's quite obvious that that is almost the intention there. So anyway.
Get in touch if you have strong or not strong feelings about the resumption of the FA Cup, including non-elite football, what really is the right thing to do in this situation. And a good plug for Since 71, fantastic blog, Stu Barker, doing loads of really good work, making sure there's great coverage of the lower leagues and National League non-elite women's football. Yeah, definitely go check them out. Flo, yeah, last thing I wanted to get to was the NWSL space kit drama.
Let's go.
What are your questions? What is going on over in America?
I don't know. We were talking about this before we started recording. I feel like it was just quite a funny coincidence that two teams went down the space narrative for their season.
So in case you missed it, listener, the Orlando Pride last night, so that's Wednesday evening, afternoon in the US, so much later night in the UK, they did a quite fantastic kit drop, beautiful kit. Kind
they
of
sent the kit into space.
And as Flo has now alluded to, they have sent a kit and a ball, we are believed.
Crazy.
We are to be believed a ball. They sent a football into space, and it's going to come back down to Orlando in the Cape Canaveral.
Straight, it's going to drop straight into the pitch.
Supposedly, they're going to actually use a ball that was in space. This is what the rumor is. And there's now an Orlando Pride kit in space. I don't want to necessarily talk about the environmental footprint of this, but it's pretty amazing. Anyway, so yeah, this then sparked, you know, a big reaction from Houston, who, for those that don't know, you know, Houston, we have a problem. Neil Armstrong landing on the moon, his first word was Houston. It's obviously a city, it's known as Space City, the Astrodome, the Houston Rockets. It's you know, it's a big part of Houston culture, although a lot of Floridians have reached out to me since I kind of joined the conversation of Houstonites who felt outraged that Orlando were cashing in on the space aesthetic, the space identity of the NWSL of American culture, who people in Florida have assured me that it is very much a Floridian Atlantic coast thing as well. Anyway, what kind of made it interesting was within hours, must have been about 45 minutes of the brilliant Orlando Pride kit dropping, with a really great shout out to the women from Hidden Figures, Alex Morgan, Marta, Ashlyn Harris, Ali Krieger, had all their names on the back of their shirts, spoke about you know, these hidden stars, wanting to uplift black women, all women, kind of people who've been overlooked, the kind of the innovators. You know, this kit was really out there saying all the right things. And then within 45 minutes, Houston suddenly have their own teaser of their own space-inspired kit.
I've got a question. Do you think Houston pushed ahead, so like brought theirs forward because they saw that the Pride had launched this? Do you think theirs was actually meant to go a bit later, but they thought, oh shit, they've pressed go, so we better do ours too, otherwise, you know, it's going to look too, like, people are going to forget about it? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did actually speak to the media, social media rep and comms team from Houston Dash today. I've been on the sources because I was writing a piece about it and I wanted to make sure. And they said they had no idea that the Orlando Pride and Nike, who is the manufacturer for both teams, were working on space kits. There has been no communication between the two teams.
That's also funny from Nike as well, not because it's probably the same departments working on it, right? Like the football, whatever department. I'll have to ask my friend that works at Nike how it works. But that's funny for them not to be like, guys, just to let you know, the Dash are also thinking of a space kit. Don't know if you want to. I don't know. That seems weird to me.
It's a little odd. It's also funny because Orlando have put this like NASA space tag. So like when you go into space, obviously I've never been, listener, you get tags or something. There's like, or if you go visit the space center, I think you get like these little like space tags or like patches. And the Houston have also launched this like Boy Scout, Girl Scout kind of patch thing as well. So there's a kind of a lot of similarities between the kits and what the clubs are doing. Anyway, so yeah, Houston have now come out with, on Monday, they're about to release their own space away kit. Orlando have now teased that their away kit is also going to be moon themed. And yeah, really brilliant video from the Houston comms teams, Googling Space City and Houston, Texas does in fact come up. The best thing about this is that, look, it's all good fun. It draws attention to great kits. And if the Houston Dash had any rival, in my honest opinion, it would be the Orlando Pride. There's been some great battles in the past between Marta and Rachel Daly that are two Aggie players that love to get into it and kind of mess with each other. So I think this is only going to improve a rivalry that's kind of been sleeping a little bit in the end of NWSL after the Pride missed out on the Challenge Cup. So I think it's lots of fun.
And we also got to mention the what we think is April Fools from Sky Blue saying that they were going to get on the action as well.
So Sky Blue then announced
it's
this
race
morning.
It's the NWSL race for space. Who will come out top? I think it looks space like Orlando race. As their jersey is literally in space right now.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, there's three trophies now this season. You've got the Challenge Cup, the NWSL Championship, and the space race. Who is going to win all
that's
these
the, that's the real quiz.
Star Wars is coming to a stadium near you. My last shout out before we get out of here is go follow _HoldTheLine. Big shout out to Craig Hadley and a lot of crew of great other podcasters, Twitter people, journalists, writers who've put together a really great women's football phone-in kind of on Periscope and YouTube on Mondays, I think 7 p.m. British Mean Time. So yeah, go check that out. I was not available to kind of check it out while it was going on, but I've since rewatched some of it back and it's really, really cool and a really great space to be seeing in the women's game. Flo, you got anything else?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, look, I'll let you have your evening and I'll speak to you after you've been back from King's Meadow on Sunday. Be well. See ya.